When we first got a piano so that I could take piano lessons, my parents arranged for me to take them at St. Philomena's Church from one of the nuns, and that was considered a real scandal in the neighborhood. I mean, amongst my Jewish friends, they thought that was really weird. Who walked in that great big church sitting there? Whoever walked in there? Who would ever dare? And people said, what are you doing there? Aren't you scared that they'll hurt you? Mm-hmm. And I would say, well, no, they're really seem okay.
Very nice.
I must confess it made me uneasy because there was so much uneasiness. It was thought very strange. Mm-hmm. But I did go there.
So what you're intimating
lessons.
Is that there wasn't too much mixing.
No, oh no.
Mm-hmm. Of different groups of people there. Everybody.
Yeah, there weren't a huge number. I mean, obviously, St. Philomena's had a very large congregation, but there weren't huge numbers in our immediate mm-hmm. area of Catholics. There mm-hmm. were some, certainly. Mm-hmm. They are obviously drawing from a much larger area. Mm-hmm. But there was no Jew was walking inside that church, and I don't suppose mm-hmm. any of them were walking inside our synagogues or temples. Mm-hmm. It was not a lot of that kind of ecumenical
right.
stuff going
were
on.
Were the physical aggressions between Jew and non-Jew children?
Well, the worst of them that ever happened were at Alder Dice mm-hmm. and happened not so much between Squirrel Hellions of different religious persuasions, but between the kids from Greenville and Hazelwood and the Squirrel Hill kids, which turned into Jewish Gentile, but I think amongst other things, it was a real social class issue. Mm-hmm. And it was the period when my mother was president of the PTA that there were real riots going on. I mean, mm-hmm. it was around the war time, and there was a lot of ideology around Hitler and so forth. So there was some very bad stuff that mm-hmm. was going on in 42, 43, whatever. Well, I was well out of high school. I was out of college by 42. But it was going on there. And I think in our day, we didn't have so much physical violence between us, but we didn't have any mingling either. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that was Jewish Gentile, but it was really strongly social class. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were strongly working class community, and mm-hmm. Squirrel Hill was not.
Restrictions on area, living there on one street or another?
Not that I was ever aware of. If it was there, mm-hmm. it certainly was subtle, and none that I knew of. I think probably once you got north of Forbes and some of the really expensive housing, there may well have been some significant restrictions. I would not doubt that such was the case, but it certainly I was not conscious of that.
Were there any youngsters in your, let's say your high school, that eventually grew to be active in the Pittsburgh community, well known in the community?
You know, there are a number of people that have stayed in Pittsburgh mm-hmm. That are very active in Jewish community activities that went all through, that I was aware of.
Do you remember any of the names of these people who have become?
Trying to think of who some of those people would be. I mean, some of the people that are active, for example, the National Council of Jewish Women, like Jean Dickmans.
Yes.
I don't know if Jean's in Pittsburgh, but her husband was in my class.
I see.
So he was one of the people that I do remember, and there were a number of others that are active that I see in and around Federation or National Council. Harriet Levinson was in my class, mm-hmm. and she, of course, has been very active with Federation and with Council and so forth. I remember Gertie Kaplan. She's several years older than I, but I remember her, and I'm not even sure I remember her from Alder Dice. I remember her from her being a Pitt, I believe.
Yes,
I think she lived in Oakland, as a matter of fact, I believe. And but she was very active mm-hmm. at Pitt. I, of course, was not here. I was at Tech, but I was aware of her. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of friends
here. By the way, did your father continue in that mine business?
Yes,
until
he went into his own business. It's still there on the south side. Somebody bought it, of course, after that. B.M. Kramer. And company.
Oh, so it is still
the company's name is still there. Yeah, and he was, I think, the only Jewish person in that business. It was very unusual for any Jews to be in the mill and mine supplies.
Yes.
And it involved not just selling, but fitting and, you know, being very knowledgeable about equipment.
Did he learn that?
Oh, yes, he learned that as he went.
Oh, and as he went. Not, no schooling for that.
Not that I know of. Mm-hmm.
Now, you took violin lessons,
mm-hmm.
And you took piano lessons both at St. Philomena's?
Well, no, I took piano for a couple of years at St. Philomena's, and then I moved on to other teachers, and I took violin with Ralph Lawando, who used to be, remember him, he wrote, he was a music critic for one of the papers, and Ralph Lawando was my violin teacher.
Have you continued that?
I'm about to start it again.
Good.
Yeah.
And piano?
Yes, I have started it again. I've been re-studying for the last couple of years. But I took lessons for each for 7-8 years, for a long time. And then while I was at Carnegie Tech, I played in the Carnegie Tech Orchestra, even though I was at Margaret Morrison.
Right.
So I did. And we had an orchestra that I helped start at the East End Ikes that played for some years, and now is at the Jewish Community Center in Squirrel Hill, but was at the Ikes. So.
Now, when you were ready to graduate at Taylor Allardyce, were there such things as scholarships being given out for college?
Yeah. There were. And I did have.
You did have.
Right. There were. They did at National Honor Society, and I think they had already started the merit scholarships, I believe. At least they
National
had something.
Honor,
they had something like that. And so there were.
Was the scholarship given on merit or financial need? And you, what kind of scholarship did you receive?
I can't remember what I had. I think it was something from that Carnegie Tech arranged, and I can't remember what it was. It might have been a national merit exam, I don't know. But I know I had a scholarship all 4 years, and I know that I reapplied each year at Tech for it through Carnegie Tech. Then they had NYA work then, National Youth Administration work. And I did that too.
What was that involved?
That you worked and you got paid in exchange. It was like a scholarship arrangement, except that you worked at the college. So I worked in a couple of the offices helping secretaries or whatever. Whatever they told me to do, I did it as best I could. Right.
Really sad.
But that was fun. As it turned out, that was fun.
What did you major in?
Social work. They had a social work program then, both a bachelor's and a master's program.
Oh, the bachelor's was also there?
Mm-hmm.
Was in their regular
in Margaret
college.
Morrison.
Oh, in Margaret. Yeah. You started there and went on.
Yeah. I mean, all of Tech had that. I mean, it's the same configuration as now, except that it was even more specialized.
Right.
It was Margaret Morrison Fine Arts and Engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And Margaret Morrison had 8 or 10 departments that, one of which was social work.
Mm-hmm.
They had costume design, home economics, secretarial studies, library studies, nursing, general science. The girls were not admitted to the engineering school in those days.
That's
so if they wanted to be engineers, they had to get a general science degree. They would take all their courses at the engineering school, but they would not be allowed to get an engineering.
Isn't that interesting?
It was charming.
And nobody rebelled?
Well, people tried, but they didn't have the expectation of going to listen to them, so they plowed on. It was strongly so.
Was Carnegie Tech the university here at the time? I mean, was it considered?
Well, I think so, probably academically. Mm-hmm. So it was much smaller than Pitt and much more specialized and probably much more WASPy. There were very few Jews at Carnegie Tech.
There were.
Margaret Morrison, there were none, except about 6 of us.
Really?
Yeah. And there were no sororities that were permitted or such for the Jewish students. The first day of orientation, the Dean of Women asked all the Jewish students, male and female, to stay behind. We were in the Fine Arts Auditorium for a great big session. And so there we were, picked out immediately, and told us we should not be clannish and should watch ourselves and not draw too much attention to ourselves. And what she meant by that, you know what she meant by that, was that she did not allow, and it was in her discretion, any sororities or, well, there were Jewish fraternities, but there were not Jewish sororities. The sororities were then, they went national later, but they were then not national. Then in my junior year, I was president of the junior class at Margaret Morris, and I had no interest whatsoever in a sorority, but lots of people did, the few handfuls of people that were Jewish that were there. And we finally got her, well, I think she had just left by then, so we finally got that office to agree to let there be a Jewish sorority. And that was the first, and that would have been, well, I graduated in 42, so it would have been 40.
Was that a surprise to you that such an announcement would be made?
We were flabbergasted. I mean, first her isolating us that way.
Right.
I mean, we were all really taken aback when she was all the Jewish students. This was both men and women students. But the men were largely in engineering or fine arts. Now, in fine arts, they always, those women's sororities in fine arts always did take Jewish students. It was in Margaret Morrison that they did.
I see.
And, never took a lot, but they did. And there never were a lot, either. There were a huge number of Jewish students there. But I was stunned. I mean, we were all just flabbergasted. We could not believe that this was going on. And then, the first day of our sophomore year at Margaret Morrison, we arrived for school, each of us, and they were standing out there rushing. I will never forget the sight of this under that arch that's in front of Margaret Morrison, and they were grabbing people and signing them up for a rushing event, and every time a Jewish student would show up, they would just open up and let you through. I mean, it was so noticeably obvious, and as I say, I had no interest whatsoever in the sorority.
No,
it just
seemed
a grave injustice, to say the least. And finally, when, as I say, when I was in my junior year, they finally did get cracking with that. But it was not a campus in which there were a lot of liberal impulses occurring.
Nor was it a campus probably where you had, as you do today, groups get together to protest such action.
No, there were a lot of campus activities by those who wished to indulge, but they were largely related to much broader political issues. The war, et cetera, was a big political issue, clearly.
Right.
And then where the Jewish students tended to go for their activities was to the newspaper, which I think is not unusual on a lot of campuses. So you tended to have a high percentage of us there. And I was news editor, my husband was whatever, editor, business editor, I think, and so forth. And the man that was the editor wrote an article in support of strikers who were striking at Kaufman's department store.
That's right.
And there was wrath beyond wrath. Edgar Jay himself, I think, must have come down there. I mean, they were beside themselves, and they called this guy in, and they called the rabbis in. Freehoff came and others to tell him this was not nice for a Jewish boy to do.
They did tell him that.
And that's what we understood, and they threatened to suspend him and expel him. He happened to be a really outstanding student, as it happened. They finally yielded on that. They did make him give up the editorship, however. And they were quite beside themselves. And whomever it was that got to the Board of Trustees, and it could have been Edgar Jay, somebody that had given lots of money, obviously. I would say, I mean, somebody obviously connected to them had gotten their dander up because the articles had emerged supporting the strikers and such. And here we were, Jewish. And the newspaper always was strikingly Jewish.
In terms of the kinds of issues?
No, not so much the issues as the people.
I see.
People on the editorial board tended. That tended to be the place if you wanted to have campus activity, that Jewish people could go and not be locked out of campus activity.
That was another time, wasn't it?
Oh, it was amazing. Mm. My brother went to Carnegie Tech and got his degree in metallurgy in 1940. And he and another Jewish boy were the two highest scholastically in the class, and a year later neither of them was hired. Not one steel company here would hire a Jew. That was 1940. Finally, they each left town and went to Republic Steel in Massillon, Ohio, and were hired there, but not here. And when a number of people did get really exercised over all of that sort of thing, went to the administration at Carnegie Tech, they said, well, it's not, you know, we didn't cause that, but if they don't want to hire Jews, they want to hire Jews. They weren't willing to take a stand.
Yes.
Now, a few years later, that started to change, partly because of the war.
Yes.
You know, their demand for technical personnel was very great, and so it began to alter and of course ultimately did alter substantially.
Were there any Jews among the teaching staff?
A few.
A few.
Not a lot,
mm-hmm.
but a few.
But there were a few.
Mm-hmm.
What motivated you toward seeking out social work as your profession?
I think it must have been my grandmother.
Really?
I do. And my mother's
your
working for Anna.
Thing.
Yeah. And my mother working for Anna Heldman, I think, and all of her stories about
mm-hmm.
all of the things that happened there and the work they did. Because I knew from the time I was a little girl that I wanted to be a social worker. And it was very clear to me that that's what I was going to be. And
did you ever meet Anna Heldman?
No. No,
she
I think
had
she
died.
Was. I think she must have.
I can't
have.
Remember when she
I
died.
I don't remember either. I don't recall ever meeting her. I just recall my mother's stories about that office and what went on at the settlement. And I did a lot of volunteer work, mostly in college, not so much in high school, up there. It was still very Jewish, but there was beginning to be a change in that community, and there was lots of tension then between the black community that was there starting to move in and the Jewish community was still hanging on. They were not really cordial to the black
they
kids
weren't
in the
cordial.
Neighborhood, not early on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, obviously, it changed considerably.
Where did those black families come from who moved to the Hill, do you
I
know?
I think from the South. Mostly.
Oh, they came up from the South.
I
and moved right in
migration.
The probably yeah. was the least expensive housing.
Well, it was part of that ethnic succession thing
mm-hmm.
that you see. You know, it had been all Jewish prior to Jews. I think there had been Irish people there. And then there were Syrians and Lebanese and whatever. And then somewhere mixed in were some Italians, I think. And then, you know, it's sort of a classic ethnic succession that you see in cities in the United
mm-hmm.
Eastern seaboard cities in the United mm-hmm. States as populations arrived, and then it started to turn black.
So your grandmother and your mother were really models for
mm-hmm.
you in terms of moving you toward helping others
right.
in the social work area.
Right. I mean, that was, I just knew that was for me,
mm-hmm.
and that was the right place to be.
Did you do that kind of activity is while you were in high school to go to different places
yeah,
to assist?
To do some volunteering.
Right.
Yeah, I remember we went to Brashear Association, which was a neighborhood house on the south side,
yes.
and there was one of their houses was for blacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and led a couple of groups there.
Oh.
And I was in high school at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was right down next to the mill, because when the mill was pouring, you could feel the heat. The building which were on fire, and that was all black. The rest of Brashear was not. It was all
mm-hmm.
white, and
well,
I
working
did,
class white, were they?
Yeah, well, it was
Brashear?
All steel workers.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And what other kind of things did you do there?
I led a couple of groups, and I volunteered for special activities. I did the same at the Ikes. I went
mm-hmm.
up and led some groups and assisted with activities. I did that in high school and then, of course, again in college.
Mm-hmm.
And also did work in the camps in the summer, in various camps.
As counselor?
As a counselor.
Uh-huh. Were you ever at the Jewish community camps?
Yes, I went to...
It was the Y at that time.
Right. It was Emma Farm. I never Emma Farmed too much. I did counsel a couple of years at Emma Farm in college, but I did Girl Scout camping in high school.
Oh, I
and
see.
I was up at Red Wing being very primitive. It was exceedingly primitive camp experience. So I mean, we had outdoor johns and everything,
right.
and I was there. I loved that camp. I'd gone there as a camper and then became a counselor there and did that, I think, the latter 2 years of my high school experience and then into college. And then I did camping. I did do Emma Farm. I did Red Wing further. And Laurel Y did not exist then. You know, the camp that the operated was
right.
not yet in business.
Right, right.
But Emma Farm was.
Right.
Emma Farm went way, way back.
Yes. And as you moved into your college years at Carnegie Tech, you said there was a pre-social work.
But it was a bachelor's degree in social work.
There was a bachelor's.
It was
it? That must
anything.
Have been most unusual. Because I
particularly
think
for
Pitt
schools
didn't have
with no.
Such a thing.
Pitt didn't start. Well, Pitt started while I was taking myself through college, started our programs, turned 37, I believe, here in Williamsburg, got established, but they never had an undergrad program until 72.
Right, that was unusual.
Till the undergrad programs became respectable in 72 or so, we started.
Right.
So that's our newest program here. Over there, there was just the bachelor's and the master's, and it was unusual for schools with very high academic expectations to have both the undergrad, and we always assumed as undergrads in that program that we would go on to graduate school. And we assumed that's where you would
was
go.
There a big group who were interested in going?
There were,
was
no.
That a
well, Margaret
a thing
Morrison
to
was
do?
Never very big. Margaret Morrison only had maybe totally 400 students. It was always small.
In all? In all?
All those departments.
I see. So this was only one part.
Yeah. And I think there were eight or so of us.
I see.
Hi. Hello, everybody.
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Just eight of you?
I think there were only eight or nine. We just had our 50th class reunion for all of our class. I mean, Carnegie Tech, the whole shebang.
Uh-huh.
And looking at that book, I would say that probably there were eight or ten of us that were majors. But Margaret Morrison always was, of the three colleges, was the smallest college.
Yes.
Of the three colleges on that campus, a most disparate group of colleges.
Yes.
As you can imagine.
Where did you continue in further graduate work?
I came here. This program had started in 37 or so, and I came here for my master's immediately after I graduated from college.
So you didn't take their social work class?
I didn't go to their master's program.
Ah,
I did
you
their
came
bachelor's.
To Pitt
I got
your
my
master's.
Bachelor's and came
was there some reason why you decided
well,
to
Well, I
switch?
Thought this was probably more of an expansive program at that point. And although I loved my undergraduate work, I just loved there. It was a wonderful place to be. But I thought this was expanding and growing, and I think it was true.
Right.
And then ultimately, Tech decided to give up the social work program in the mid-50s or so, and they gave up both the undergrad and the graduate program.
In the undergraduate program that you attended, did you also do, as part of your credits, do some social work in some agencies?
Not yes, we did, and I did a lot of the settlement house volunteering that I did was really under that kind of supervision, but they didn't place us working one-on-one in casework kind of situations.
They didn't. Just
and,
group work
just
type things.
Largely group
activities. So you couldn't fall too hard.
No, right. And I think that was just not done as much then for undergraduates.
Mm-hmm.
We had some such experience, but very,
very,
very little.
Limited.
Yeah.
And when you came here, who was then heading the school social?
The dean was Dr. Neustetter. And Elder Carcarle was here.
What year did you come
here? I came here in 42.
Mm-hmm.
And that was wartime, so they accelerated us. We went straight through the summer, and I graduated in, I think, in January of my second year.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was very accelerated.
Mm-hmm.
Ruth Gartland, Ruth Smalley, Gertie Wilson, Gladys Ryland, all were here at that point.
Yes.
And they had a big split many years later, not while I was here. I graduated from here in 44, and in 49, the big split. Oh, Marion Hathaway was here. She was a very famous social welfare person. They had a big split over functional versus diagnostic. And everybody left but Cockrell and the dean, and they had to hire a whole new faculty. In 48. It was a very traumatic experience for one and all. And then, of course, Smalley went on to become the dean at Pennsylvania.
Right.
She was very functional.
Yes,
but
she
that
was.
That was the big split.
Did you have the functional approach through your years?
Oh, no. This school was totally diagnostic.
No, no. When you came here, in your master's
who would
program.
Know? I came here in 40.
Yes.
Right after college.
So you were in the functional.
We were all very diagnostic. Oh, no, none of us were functional. I mean, that was the big battle, was that Smalley and Gartland were trying to teach functionalism, and it was not being accepted, you know. So, no, I would say I got very little functionalism. Large and in the field, overwhelmingly.
Were you in the casework?
I was in casework, but I did a group work placement also. Work placement at Soho Community Center, which is now the Baths or the something down there on Forbes Street. I did that, but I also did two casework placements, one at Family Society, that became Family Services, and one at Child Guidance Center.
A Pittsburgh child. Was Dr. Little there at that time?
Oh, yes. But my field instructor was Peg Brennan, the dearest woman in the world. But totally diagnostic. We did not approve of functionalism.
Really. No.
Even though Smalley and Gartland were here being quite wonderful in their way, they never won. I mean, they really lost it here.
Yes. Mm. Did you get to know any of your professors more closely than just
somewhat with Hathaway? Yes, she did invite students over to her house and talked politics a lot. So we did. But of course, when the big upheaval came, although she had nothing to do with diagnostic versus functional, she left. I mean, the upheaval was so great, and she went to Bryn Mawr and spent the rest of her career in Bryn Mawr.
Oh, she did.
She came back here, uh-huh. which was terribly sad. And so did Gertie Wilson and Gladys Ryland.
They went to Bryn Mawr?
No, they went to California. But they left at that
point. Right. So it was a real turnover.
Oh, it was a cataclysmic. Mm-hmm.
And once you came through on your program of social work, where did you move to?
We moved to Chicago.
Oh, you moved out of Pittsburgh.
We moved out of town because my husband then went to graduate school at the University of Chicago. He's a chemist.
Nice.
And when he finished that, we left Chicago and went to Rochester, New York, and then to Buffalo, New York.
So we were away for about eight years. And when you were at Carnegie Tech, your husband was then in the engineering?
He was at Carnegie Tech, right. That's where we met.
Yeah,
he was an engineer. I mean, he was a chemist, but he was in the engineering college.
But they accepted him in engineering?
Well, he was a man.
Oh, that's right. They only accepted men.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
They wouldn't have accepted him had he been a woman.
Right.
But
and
yes.
When were you two married?
1942. We just had our 50th wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Was right after both of you graduated?
Well, he was a year behind me because he had been ill and had been out for a year. And so he went to work for a research project at Carnegie Tech, and I started school here. And then we were married that December, and he stayed there on the research project till a year from that January when I finished, and
so
that's
that
when we went
finish.
To Chicago.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And so you had a long courtship.
Well, we knew each other. We're long by certain standards, a couple of years.
Uh-huh. Long by today's standards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
By finishing, you mean you finished your PhD then?
I didn't come back for my PhD until 20 years later.
Oh,
I came back in 64. I graduated in 44, so it was exactly 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But we lived out of Pittsburgh for about 8-plus years and then came back.
Was he originally a Pittsburgher?
Yes, he's a Pittsburgher.
So he has family here.
Yes.
His brothers and sisters?
A whole clan, yeah.
A big group?
Well, there are two brothers here, one sister, there's another brother who lives in California, in San Francisco, and his mother and father still lived here until they died, mm-hmm. and he had a load of cousins. It was a very big family, but most of them are gone now.
I see.
There are a few cousins still here.
Mm-hmm. Were you, as a family, when you and he married, close with these relatives?
Oh yes, we lived with his folks.
Oh, you did?
Because I was still in school. And
how'd that work out?
That was fine.
It was?
Yeah. His mother was a dream. And we had a fine time there.
That's an unusual setup.
Yeah.
Of course, at that time, it probably wasn't unusual.
It wasn't, really.
But she made it easy for you.
Yeah. She was wonderful. Yeah. And, that was sort of the usual, rather typical thing.
Did you also have a scholarship for the school social work
mm-hmm.
here?
And I had a wonderful experience here that tells us of the times, which is that I had a scholarship. It was from an honorary fraternity, sorority, that I was, it was like the Phi Beta Kappa. Here is Phi Kappa Phi there, because they give a BS, like BA now, I think, but they then didn't. And so they couldn't have a Phi Kappa Phi chapter. They were liberal arts.
Oh.
So I had a scholarship from the Phi Kappa Phi, and but it had to be approved at this end. And when Miss Gartland heard I was getting married that December, she called me in and she said, "You know, you didn't come in and ask my permission." I went into a total post-adolescent rage.
Was she laughing?
Oh, no. She was dead serious. And I said, I didn't really know I had to. She didn't really like that response. And she said, well, you know, I don't think that we should have people getting scholarships if they're getting married, because how do we know you won't get pregnant and have a baby or whatever? And I said, well, you really don't know. I mean, I don't know. How do you know? And she said, well, then I think we just can't let you continue with the scholarship. And I was totally, I think it was this very office we were sitting in, because I think this used to be Gartland's office. And I was totally outraged, of course. And I said, well, you know, I didn't really know that I needed to have another mother. And if you're not going to let me have the scholarship, I'll just drop out and work, and then I'll come back later. And I left. I mean, I was outraged at her. And about 2 weeks later, she called me back and said, well, she had been thinking about it, and she was really sorry, and of course I could have the scholarship. Mm-hmm. But that's the way students were treated in those days. I mean, it was a different world.
Yes.
Can you imagine that? It was just horrifying to me.
In other words, it was your, she was allowing you to be there. It was a gift to you to even be able to come to the store.
Yeah. And heavy control.
Right.
Heavy control.
What was her position at that time?
She was head of the casework department at Crosswood. Mm-hmm. She and Ruth Smalley were the two instructors in that department.
Yes.
Are we running out?
Stop.
Okay.
Then we'll stop you in the middle of the
And we're going to talk again.
Yes, we have a date.
We have a couple.